This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In December 1914, a man named Clarence Birdseye was suffering through a bitterly cold Canadian winter. One morning, he noticed something strange about the water he just poured into a bowl. In a letter to his father, he wrote the following.
I scooped up a handful and found that the bowl was full of a spongy mass of ice crystals. Yet a few seconds before, there had been no sign of ice in the water. Evidently, the water had been in a state of equilibrium, at the freezing point, already ready to congeal, but needing some little stirring to start the crystallization. I remember seeing the same thing done in a physics lab experiment, but certainly never ran across it before in nature. Did you?
Perhaps many people had, but only Clarence Birdseye used those observations and experiences to invent a new method of food preservation.
Fast freezing. It's familiar now, all those long freezer aisles in the grocery store. But in 1925, when Birdseye brought a Gloucester frozen, or created, I should say, a Gloucester frozen food company, the method was revolutionary. And it changed the way the world eats. Best-selling author Mark Kurlansky tells the tale in his new book, Birdseye, The Adventures of a Curious Man. He joins us now in the studio. Mark Kurlansky, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks.
It's a real pleasure to have you here. I've been a big fan of your work for quite some time. You've, of course, also written histories about salt and cod, which now suddenly it occurs to me one was used to preserve the other, and now we're talking...
Well, you know, it's odd that Birdseye shows up in three of my previous books. He's in Salt and Cod and The Last Fishtail, which is a book about Gloucester. So.
It's so he's someone that it's about time he came around to in terms of telling
exactly.
the story. Well, let me start with that little excerpt that we read from his letter home in December 1914. He was in Labrador, which wasn't exactly Canada at the time.
It was Newfoundland and Labrador was a separate British colony, and it was just the wilderness, and Labrador was the far flung frontier of Newfoundland. And there was hardly anybody there, and there were no roads, and it was so frozen in that you couldn't even get into it for about 8 months of the year, and the only way of traveling was by dog sled.
Huh. Well, what is it that little excerpt from the letter home, what does it tell us about who Clarence Birdseye was as a person?
Well, it shows that he was endlessly curious. I mean, this was actually years before he thought about starting a frozen food industry or any commercial application to freezing. This was just a stand of water by his bed and that he was observing. And isn't this interesting? He wrote home about it. He was just curious about everything. He wanted to know how everything worked. He was very interested in processes. He'd watch somebody do something and he'd ask them why they do it that way. And then he'd start wondering, isn't there a better way to do it?
In fact, it was his native curiosity that led him to Labrador in the first place. He was originally from Brooklyn and spent some time at Amherst College here in Massachusetts, but he was an adventurer of sorts.
Yeah, he wanted to be an adventurer. You know, he was born in 1886, and William Cody, Buffalo Bill Cody, lived in Staten Island when he was a kid, the most famous man in New York. Some historians say the most famous man in the world at the time. And he was, you know, he had his Wild West show, and Birdseye was fascinated by all of this. All his life, he read those 19th century Western romance adventure novels, and at his first opportunity, he went west and spent time in the Arizona Territory and in Montana, and then he had an opportunity to go to Labrador, he went there for a medical missionary, a hospital ship. But, of course, you know, come September, the harbor started freezing over and they couldn't operate anymore. But he decided to stay because in the course of going around with this hospital ship, he had run into people who were in the fox fur business. Mm-hmm. And he thought, well, that's an interesting business, so maybe I'll stay on and do that. And, you know, he would just learn about, just like, you know, he learned how to operate dog sleds and to manage dog teams, you know. So he learned how to breed wild foxes. I mean, he would just...
Well, I want to get into a little bit more about the other things beyond just the freezing that he noticed in Labrador, which got him thinking later on about food. But you just tell a wonderful story about what kind of person Clarence Birdseye was as a young man. There's so much that you reveal about that he was very much a creature of his time. I mean, you describe him as being a man in which whom the forces that define an era, in this case, the late 19th, earliest 20th century, and those forces were, you call it the age of extermination, the age of invention, and westward expansion. They all come to a fore in him.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, he was born at the height of the Industrial Revolution, and you know, in the 10 years before he was born, the automobile was invented, the electric light was invented, the phonograph. It was, you know, the way today, there's a new iPad or something every few months. There was a new industrial invention every few months when he was growing up, and there was a tremendous excitement about industry. Mm-hmm. And he was a foodie of kinds. He loved food. All his letters home, he'd say things like, "Dear Mom and Dad, guess what I had for breakfast?" And he was looking for ways that industry could make food wonderful. Now, today we think industry makes food bad, but, you know, he grew up in a reverse time. He grew up in a time where you talk about locavores. You know, everybody was a locavore, and the question was not how to have local artisanal farming, but how to expand from that.
Well, in fact, you write about how even from a young age, he always seemed to ask this question about what is this good for when he was out in nature,
right.
Like looking at everything, even to frogs.
And what does it taste like, too?
Yeah.
Anytime you saw anything, he always wanted to shoot it and eat it, see what it tasted like. Then later on, it became more refined. It was shoot it and freeze it and then eat it.
Right. But here's a man who even from a young age, was not afraid to try and profit from nature. I mean, you tell a great story about how, for example, at 11 years old, he learned taxidermy and then opened an American
when he was
school
10
of taxidermy.
When he was 10 years old, he was obsessed with wanting a shotgun. It was part of his Wild West adventure. He wanted to have his own gun so he could shoot a bunch of birds. And he found all these muskrats were hopping around on his parents' farm in Long Island. And so, you know, this 10-year-old kid contacts the Bronx Zoo and says, "I got a lot of muskrats. You want some muskrats?" And they said, "No, we can't really use muskrats, but we know this British guy who's stocking this estate, and he'd like muskrats." So he, at the age of 10, trapped all these muskrats and shipped them live to England and made enough money for his shotgun. And he started shooting and killing a lot of birds. So he started hanging out in taxiderm stores and asking them how they did it. And he learned how to stuff birds. He put an ad in sporting magazines for the American School of Taxidermy. And I can't find any record of anybody ever answering the ad, but I imagine they'd be a little surprised to discover that the entire staff of the American School of Taxidermy was one 11-year-old boy.
I'm speaking with author Mark Kurlansky. He's a best-selling author who's written, of course, about salt and about cod. And his new book is called Birdseye, The Adventures of a Curious Man. It is a biography of Clarence Birdseye, the man behind Birdseye Frozen Foods, and which is specifically now a famed Gloucester business. So this is a chance for our Gloucester listeners to chime in. I mean, did you or your family members ever work for Clarence Birdseye at the General Seafoods Company, as it was once known in Gloucester? And do you ever remember meeting the inventive, irrepressible adventurer on the streets of Gloucester? And if Clarence Birdseye was the man who helped industrialize food production, we'll talk about that in a minute, should we be thanking him or maybe not? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mark Kurlansky, so here's a young man who was born at the end of the 19th century, grows up in the 20th century. We talked about how his sense of adventure and discovery takes him to Labrador over the course of many years and many winters, in fact. What did he observe in terms of how the people of Labrador themselves were eating that made him really long for eventually coming up with a new way to preserve fresh food?
Well, originally, I mean, they were eating all kinds of odd things that he'd never eaten before. So that was great because, you know, he really wanted to try all of these things. And, you know, he wrote home about all of them and everything. And it all kind of changed because he got married and had a baby. And, you know, his wife moved up with their newborn baby to 200 miles from the nearest medical facility, mm-hmm. 200 miles by dog sled. You know, but his wife was the daughter of one of the founders of National Geographic Society, and her father and her uncle. And she grew up with all these nutty bird's-eye-like people who were always going off and doing wild things. So she thought it was fine. They went up there. But Grenfell, the medical missionary who originally brought him to Labrador, was always lecturing the local people about how their diets lacked fresh food, and that's why they had all sorts of health problems. So suddenly, when he had a family, he started worrying about this, how to get fresh food.
Because they'd have to go all winter without any source of incoming food.
Nothing could come in, and nothing grew there. And so he started bringing in food in the summer and freezing it. Now, it was pretty easy to freeze things in a 40-degree below zero climate. And he noticed the Inuits would go ice fishing, and they would haul out a fish, and it would instantly be frozen in the air. And
you tell a story about how the Inuits say they would even be able to put the fish back in the water several days later, and it would wriggle to life.
Yeah, yeah, he claimed this, and you know, years later, when he lived in Gloucester, he would catch these pickerel in Niles Pond and freeze them and try to bring them back to life in his bathtub, to the great annoyance of his family. And, you know, everybody in Gloucester thought this was a little nutty, but he swore that he'd seen this happen.
And so what is the key thing that he noticed that the Inuit already knew, essentially, about how to really preserve freshness when it comes to freezing things?
Well, yeah, frozen food had existed for a long time. There was even frozen food back in the Civil War. But what they used to do is they would, for instance, frozen beef. They would take a side of beef, and they'd put it in a room at about 30 degrees, just below freezing. And after a few weeks, it would be frozen. And then when you thawed it out, it would be mushy and terrible. And that's what everybody thought of as frozen food. Everybody had a horror of frozen food. They thought it was disgusting. But this frozen food in Labrador wasn't like anything that he'd ever experienced. He said it was just like fresh food. Now, of course, today we don't really think fresh food and frozen food taste the same. But relative to what frozen food had been, or relative to salted food or canned food, this stuff was remarkably like fresh food. And, you know, he in building the frozen food industry, that's what he kept emphasizing to people. This is just like fresh food. Mm-hmm. And relative to anything anyone had experienced before, it was.
And the idea was that by freezing things incredibly quickly, the crystals of ice that are formed are very, very small in comparison.
That's right. It's something that salt makers had known for centuries, that in crystallization, when the more rapidly a crystal forms, the smaller it is, which is why sea salt, solar evaporated sea salt, had large crystals because it formed very slowly. And when you have large crystals, it would distort the tissue of the food you were freezing and make it mushy.
Mm. So he spent, as you said, with his wife and young child quite some time in Labrador, and then in the 1920s came back to the United States.
Well, he came back in 1917.
Okay.
And didn't really think again about frozen food, because he was no longer in a world where anybody was interested in frozen food. There was no reason to eat frozen food. And in the 1920s, he was working for a group called the American Fisheries Association, which was basically a lobbying group for the fishery business. And he was working on the problem of how to get fish to market in better condition. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of experiments with packaging and better ways of packaging fish to get it to market in better condition. And none of it was very successful. And then suddenly one day he started thinking about all that freezing he had done in Labrador. He always said that he thought that ideas got lodged in your brain and they would just suddenly surface one day when you needed them. I don't know, but that's what happened to him.
Interesting. And why did he end up? So he tried to create this company in New York. That didn't quite work out. Why did he then choose Gloucester?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. He knew about Gloucester because the guy who financed his fox fur business in Labrador, Harris Hammond, was one of the Hammond family that lived in Gloucester. So he always knew about Gloucester, and Gloucester has always been a famous place, the oldest fishing port in America, and one of the biggest and most important. So he went there because they had the supply of fish coming in all the time, most of which was being salted at the time, and also because they had a highly skilled labor force, and because it was a famous place, and because it's a kind of a nice place. Birdseye was a great salesman. And, you know, part of his selling thing was he'd invite them to Gloucester, you know, come to Gloucester this summer. Never say come to Gloucester this winter, you know, you don't do that.
Well, I want to get to a couple of callers here in just a second, but before we do, Mark Kurlansky, I'm just curious, when Birdseye's fast freezing method finally took off, how did it change the way the world eats?
Well, it was a major component in the industrialization of food. In the whole concept of having agricultural industries producing food for corporations who sold it around the world. This was really made possible by freezing. And so, you know, he had a lot to do with creating agribusiness. I mean, he'd go to farms and work with the farmers on how to make their produce more suitable for industry. He was the nightmare of today's foodie, you know.
We'll talk about more about that in just a second, but I am speaking with Mark Kurlansky. He's a best-selling author of books such as Salt and Cod, and his new biography is Birdseye, The Adventures of a Curious Man. Let's go to our callers. Alex is calling from Gloucester. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi, this is Alex Castiello, and I have a story I want to relate to you about my pizzeria grandfather. It seems that in, I think it was during Prohibition, 1929 or so, if that was Prohibition, Clarence Birdseye would travel from Gloucester to Revere to my grandfather's pizzeria and enjoyed the product so much that he engaged my grandfather. This is a not so happy ending, by the way. He said to my grandfather, "This is such a great pizza. How about if we freeze it and bring it to market?" And Antonio Castiello said, "Nah, this will never work." That's a sad story.
Because then Birdseye went ahead and did it himself.
Well, that's what Birdseye did, is he went around and, you know, he wanted to freeze everything and see how it would work, you know. he would capture birds in Eastern Point that were flying by and freeze them and eat them and see what they were like.
Let's take another call. Thank you so much for your call, Alex. Anne Marie is calling from Plymouth. You're on the air, Anne Marie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call. It's a very interesting subject. My father worked for General Foods after World War II. He was a mechanical engineer. And he and his ultimate business partner together worked on the process that really helped spawn the frozen fish stick business, which was the fish block. It's pretty interesting that subsequent to all of his inventions, General Foods didn't actually really do much with seafood after that. My father and his partner started their own business in Lowell, Massachusetts, called Commodore Seafoods, and they were a private label packager of frozen fish sticks. And I've lived my whole life, you know, knowing about the story about Clarence Birdseye and frozen foods.
Anne Marie, thank you so much for your call. Mark Kurlansky, I mean, obviously just in those two calls, we hear of the impact that Clarence Birdseye had locally in Massachusetts, in Gloucester.
Yeah, and we should also mention that, you know, he sold his company to Post, which created General Foods, in 1929. So this was creating good employment throughout the Depression.
Mm-hmm. I'm still curious about, in the last couple minutes that we have, about this question about how his method and the impact that it had on how we eat. Because in the beginning of the book, you actually write that here was a man who helped change civilization by facilitating the process of nationalizing and internationalizing food consumption. I'm curious because you've also written a book about the history of cod, which is now one of those species which, you know, whose future still is looking very murky. And it's in exactly mm-hmm. because food has been so globalized. And obviously our population is going up as well. But considering that, what's your thought on the impact that Birdseye had, both positive and negative, if any?
Well, I mean, this whole debate about agro-business and local farms is a very troubling thing because agro-business was originally created in the minds of people like Birdseye to make food widely available in the world. And one out of six people in the United States today is still hungry. Mm-hmm. So it has failed. It has failed to make food available to everyone, just as the local artisanal farm system that we had before failed to do that. So I'm not sure what the solution is, but I think that we shouldn't lose sight that the goal is or should be to get everyone fed.
Mm. Do you think that Clarence Birdseye could have been a man to come out of any other time period, or was it just by sort of the happenstance of history that he ended up being someone who changed the way we eat?
I think he probably would have done something extraordinary in any time period, but he would have done something else in some other period. And, you know, of course, if he grew up now, he probably wouldn't think industry was that wonderful. We tend not to think industry is that wonderful. I talk in the book about my father, who grew up in Quincy, and his father, my grandfather, was a tailor. And so my father grew up with, handmade shirts and handmade pants and handmade suits. And his childhood dream was to someday have a factory-made suit. Huh. And, you know, that's the times that Birdseye grew up in, the wonderful and exciting thing was to have something industrial, something made by industry. We don't really think that way anymore. And Birdseye, probably if he had been in a different generation, wouldn't have thought that way either. But, you know, he had about 300 patents. He invented lots of things. He invented a type of light bulb that's still in use. He did things on paper processes with sugarcane waste and dehydrated food. And he invented an automatic fish reel, which I don't think anybody's ever used. you get a strike and you push a button and woo.
So sounds like he was bound to have an impact somewhere.
Yeah, I think so. He was just a very resourceful, inventive person.
Mark Kurlansky is the best-selling author of Birdseye, The Adventures of a Curious Man. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
I should also mention that Mark Kurlansky has a reading and book signing tonight in Gloucester at 7 p.m. at the Cape Ann Museum. There's also an excerpt of the book that you can check out right now at our website, radioboston.org.